This is NHL Radio.
Well, I dreamed I saw the knights in armor come and saying something about a queen. There were peasants singing and drummers drumming and the archers split the tree.
Time now for NHL Hour with Commissioner Gary Bettman on NHL Home Ice.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the NHL Hour. This is Gary Bettman along with Bill Clement. I'm coming to you live from the Sirius XM studios in Nashville, Tennessee, which are located in the Somme Center. Bill is in New York, I assume, at the NHL store powered by Reebok.
And he is.
He is. How are you? I'm at the home of the Predators, obviously, and you're at my home when I'm not at home. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. So listen, that sounded more like sign-off music than sign-on music. Was that your choice?
Yeah, of course it was my choice. I was in mood for a little Neil Young. You know, we're doing a little bit of country with a rock and roll flair since I'm in Nashville. But before you and I chit-chat, let's remind our listeners that the call-in number is 1-877-NHL on XM. That's 1-877-645-6696. Obviously, we'll take calls like we normally do. And I'm going to be joined by the chairman of the Nashville Predators, David Freeman, as well as president of hockey operations, David Poyle, and head coach, Barry Trotz. Who are you going to be joined with, by Bill?
Greg Baldinger. And you know what? I'm sitting in your seat.
How does it feel?
It feels just fine, thank you.
Okay. Good, don't mess
I won't mess it up. Believe me, I've been here for a couple hours earlier. I did NHL Live from noon to two, so I'm here. It's my wife's birthday, so she's in town and with my daughter, with my sister-in-law, and we're all going out to dinner after the show. So it's going to be a great Thursday.
Well, wish her a happy birthday from me and from all of our listeners. And I'm sorry I couldn't be with you to join you for dinner. Not that you invited me.
That's okay. Could you just sort of email over your credit card number?
I could, but I won't. Let's talk about a couple of things. First of all, in case our listeners haven't heard, we announced that we're going to have games in Europe to start next season again, NHL Premier 2009, and the Red Wings are going to be playing the St. Louis Blues at the Globe Arena in Stockholm, and the Chicago Blackhawks will be joined by the Florida Panthers at the Hartwell Arena in Helsinki, Finland. And those games are going to be played on Friday, October 2nd, and Saturday, October 3rd. And when you're looking at the teams we've sent over, think about Detroit going back to Sweden with Lidstrom, Zetterberg, Holmstrom, Franzen, Cronwell, Samuelson, and the list goes on and on. And the Blues have an outstanding prospect in Patrick Berglund, who was their top pick in 2006. So we think that should be pretty exciting for our fans in Stockholm, and please keep in mind, as you know, these are regular season games. And in Finland, the Panthers will be there with Ville Peltonen, who's a native of Helsinki. So we'll add some flavor to that. And this is now the third year in a row we're doing it, starting 2 years ago with the Ducks and Kings in London. And last year, obviously, this season, the Rangers and Lightning in Prague and the Penguins and Senators were in Stockholm. So it should be pretty good. Should be really good.
If I'm invited, I'm going to be there. I'll tell you what, if you send over your credit card number, I'll follow you anywhere you want on the planet. A question for you. I mean, to get four teams to go, there's obviously a process to get four teams to say, okay, we'll go, we'll play in Europe. That's one part of the equation. How do you get the host cities lined up?
We talk to the arenas and promoters and the what I'll call the hockey infrastructure in terms of the teams, professional teams that are there and that know the markets pretty well. So, for example, in Helsinki, we were talking to the people who run the arena and own the Jokerit team, and they're delighted to have two regular season games that count in our standings. Actually,
no, I read in.
Go ahead.
The press release was really interesting. There was a note about Detroit having not played in Europe in 71 years. And I had no idea that this had happened 71 years ago, that they played a nine-game postseason series against the Montreal Canadiens in England and France. So it's been quite a while since the Red Wings have made an appearance over there, and I can only imagine with seven Swedes on their team what it's going to be like in Stockholm.
I think it's going to be good fun. And I think, you know, sometimes when you have neutral site games, the intensity of fan interest and the rooting isn't quite what you'd see with a team playing at home. But it's clear that I think the fans in Stockholm are going to be viewing the Red Wings as the home team. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Hey, did you see the Ovechkin goal last night?
Sure did, and it was a thing of beauty. And listen, it was ESPN's number one play in their top 10, and it was one of those neat plays because the start of it and the end of it were remarkable. And if he hadn't scored, nobody would probably be talking about it, but if he hadn't made that move in the neutral zone, it wouldn't have been a highlight of the magnitude that it is. But put those two together, and he just continues to develop his own highlight reel.
It's amazing. It probably wasn't as acrobatic as the goal in Phoenix a couple of seasons ago, but as you said, it was incredible. And backhanding the puck off the boards to himself and then dancing around a Montreal player and regain the puck. I mean, it's incredible. He's got, 42 goals and 369 shots. He leads the Rocket Richard race by 8 goals over Jeff Carter and Zach Parise. And the guy with the next most shots has 252, and that's Eric Staal. I don't know how anybody's going to catch him. One other thing, you know, if our current leader, Evgeny Malkin, wins the scoring championship, he'd become the 8th different player in the last 8 seasons to do so. Pretty amazing. You know who the others are?
I guess I've given enough time, but we don't have that much time, but I had no idea. He will be the 8th different guy to win the scoring title.
Jagr in 2001, Ginla in 2002, Forsberg 2003, Saint-Louis in 2004, Thornton in 2006, Crosby 2007, and Ovechkin in 2008.
So what does that say about the league?
It means we've never been more blessed with incredible, highly skilled, talented players.
I'll second that. That's for darn sure. And that's why Sunday, as a matter of fact, too, people that have not seen the Alexander Ovechkin highlight can go to NHL.com, and obviously we're going to get a chance to see him this Sunday as well at 12:30, the Washington Caps taking on the Pittsburgh Penguins. That's NBC's game. But if you missed the Ovechkin highlight, go to NHL.com, and you can find it there.
Boy, you're the one who made the shameless plug today. Thank you.
I told you I was sitting in your seat.
There you go.
I've got to carry the tradition.
Hey, speaking of sitting in seats, having the benefit of being here in the Somme Center at the SiriusXM Studios, which the Somme Center is the home of the Nashville Predators, guess who just strolled into the studio?
David Poile, Barry Trotz.
You're right on the second guest. Barry, how are you?
I'm doing fine.
Welcome.
Oh, pleasure to be here. Welcome to our city.
It's always good to be here. You've been here a long time. This is, 11 years for you?
It has been. It's gone so quickly, too. It's been a wonderful 11 years for myself. And in the coaching fraternity, it's about 4 or 5 jobs for some.
It's almost a lifetime.
It is.
I don't wish that on you.
Yeah, I know. It's part of the job description, but it's been wonderful. Starting from the ground up, it's been a real good experience for myself, and I've learned a lot in the last 11 years, and hopefully I can continue to learn.
Talk to me about your relationship with David Poile. Obviously, for you to have the tenure that you're having, you must really know how to get along with your general manager.
Well, I think, coming in the year before we were actually playing on the ice really helped, and I think it gave me a framework of we're building an organization. This is not going to be, win now type of thing. When we first started, it was to build something good for long term. And I had a pretty good perspective of everything that we were trying to do. And I think the one thing that that's fostered is a relationship with David in terms of the trust that he has in me and the trust that I have in him, that we're on the, everybody's on the same page trying to win a you know, develop a team, try to win a championship and go from there. Obviously, we've been sidetracked a few times with different situations which are out of our control, so we've had to manage those situations. And I think David's been a supporter of me from day one. I went to training camp in Washington in 1982 and worked with David in Washington. And when, obviously, when he came over to Nashville, I wanted to be a part of that process, and he had me come here. And it's been great 11 years, and he's a wonderful guy to work for.
You were one of the earlier coaches to make the AHL to NHL transition. You obviously were a trendsetter based on what we've seen the last couple of years with the number of guys coming straight up to head coaching jobs in the NHL. What was that transition like for you, and are you surprised that this now seems to be a very important source of head coaches?
Well, I think just like anything, the game's changed so much, and it changes every year. And as coaches find different ways to neutralize certain things, take
like,
advantage.
Like offense.
Like, well, you know, you know, you talk about offense. There's such talent now in the league. It's incredible. You know, we just played the Detroit Red Wings. They scored 5 power play goals. I don't know how many teams could do what they did last night. They're blessed with a lot of skill, and they can make it happen. But, you know, as coaches, you know, we take our resources, what we have, and try to make it work. And sometimes if you don't have the people that the other team does, you know, we'll have to do a better job defending against them and counteracting some of that. And because of that, you know, some of the offense is down. But to me, the offense is, if it's down, you look at the games from 1970 and just the goaltenders. I mean, the goaltenders are the best athletes. We have a young goaltender, Pekka Rinne, so he's 6'5". I used to collect hockey cards when I was young. Goalies were 5'7". I mean, they're just filling a lot of space. They're more athletic. They're the first guys that, you know, those are the glamour positions now. And, you know, everybody has video on everything, and the power plays, penalty kill, and everybody's, you know, knows the X's and O's of the game. Young players are more prepared to play in the National Hockey League, so it is a little tougher. But at the same time, the game has evolved, and it's evolution. It's bigger, faster, stronger men are playing a game that is terrific to watch.
I wasn't going to bring up last night's game, but since you did, was there a mandatory practice today for your penalty killers?
Well, there was some retribution, I think, after the game. They might have to repaint the dressing room in Detroit, but it's just one of those things. We got a little frustrated, and obviously their execution was exceptional, and that was really the difference last night. But hats off to them. They're a great hockey team and a great organization.
So you've been in Nashville for more than a decade. At one point early on, Sports Illustrated had an article that this was the model expansion franchise for any sport. And lately there seems to, in some quarters, not too many, some condemnation of non-traditional markets. How do you react to that when you see it? And what's your view, having lived here for as long as you
have?
Well,
I'll tell you what. You know, I'm from Winnipeg, Manitoba. They lost a hockey team, and a lot of people in Winnipeg, when I go back home, don't understand that, you know, why is there a team in Nashville, Tennessee, and not Winnipeg, Manitoba. And I always say, you know what, we're drawing better than the best year they had in Winnipeg. So, you know, it's non-traditional market, to me, takes a whole generation. There's a number of people who, once they're exposed to the game in the South, very passionate about the game, love our game, think it's exceptional. The problem is that, you know, you have to change a lot of ways of thinking. A, we're in football country, and the people are used to going out, you know, maybe once, twice a week. And we play a lot of Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday games in our league. And you know, if we played every game on Saturday, we'd sell out. And that's traditionally in the non-traditional markets that happens. It's the weekday games that really, I think, the non-traditional markets have to grow their fan base, grow a lot of that. And we're trying to do that within the realm of our local media and what have you. Obviously, being on TV as much as possible helps, and then exposing as many people to it. The kids love it, and once the kids love it, they're going to grow up to love it. And we just need more of our kids than we came 10 years ago. We're 6 and 7 years old. They're now, you know, going to college. Once they get out of college and are the dollar earners, then you're going to see those people be lifetime fans for Nashville, Tennessee.
We're talking to Barry Trotz, the head coach of the Nashville Predators, the only head coach they've ever had. And just joining us as well is David Poile, president of hockey operations and general manager. David, how are you?
So far, so good today, Gary. We didn't play so good last night against Detroit, but we get a chance to redeem ourselves tonight against St. Louis.
We were just talking about last night's game, and we won't dwell on it, but we were talking about you for a second before you came into the studio. I was asking Barry how he managed to put up with you for as long as he did, because you and the guys in Buffalo have the two longest GM-coach marriages in the NHL right now. What do you attribute that to?
To say something clever, but I just know Barry's just
that would be nice.
First of all, for myself, I pride myself in trying to have good relationships in work, period, and in my life. I think that's really, it's kind of your goal to get along with people. I'm a manager, if you will. With Barry, it's been pretty easy because not only is he a really good coach, but more importantly, he's a real good person. And I mean, there's always ups and downs, and especially in this business. But I think everybody I've met along the way, nobody handles the highs and lows better than Barry does. The other thing I think is really unique in terms of how we really, you know, got together, and this goes back to my first year as a general manager in Washington, which is now about 27 years ago. And Barry came in; he was a player at that training camp. And I was the general manager. Jack Button was our director of player personnel, took a real liking to Barry. Barry didn't make any of our teams at that time. And then he went off to a little bit of coaching in university, and then we hired him to be a scout in our organization. So got to know Barry as a hockey guy, if you will. And then we brought him into Baltimore to be the assistant coach for our farm club there, then promoted him to our head coach of our farm club in Portland, the AHL. And when I got the chance to come to Nashville, against the wisdom of all my peers that told me at the time, I said, what's it like running an expansion team? And they said, well, you're not going to be very good, so make sure you get the most experienced coach you can get, because that'll cover up for a lot of your sins. But my gut told me that Barry was the right guy. It was the right choice. And I thought that this whole experience was about developing people, growing a franchise, and to give Barry a chance. So when you look at it, just like in a business, what a great resume Barry has in the relationship to bring somebody along in your company, so to speak. So it's been a really good fit, and hopefully it'll go on for a lot of years.
Although it is unusual for a general manager to have had the tenure, David, that you've had with one team, or in two cases, in Washington and here, and for Barry, you know, it's general managers sometimes, when the team underperforms, are shown the door, and coaches, you know, it's unusual for a coach not to lose a team, not to lose the players for as long as you've been at it. I mean, it speaks, in addition to your relationship, to your commitment to stability. Either of you have a thought on that?
Well, I mean, again, there's so many highs and lows, and we are a knee-jerk reaction business oftentimes, and I've been very fortunate, again, being at the right place at the right time. Sometimes when a GM loses his job or a coach loses his job, it's not because of the GM. It's not even necessary about the performance of the team. It could be an emotional owner. It could be the fans not responding to whatever the campaign that the team is running, both on and off the ice. There's any number of things that affects our jobs. And again, I think you have to be definitely a little bit lucky in this business to have the right people that believe in you. I think it's my job to stay in contact with the ownership, to carve out the vision, the game plan, and hopefully that goes beyond just tonight's game. It goes, you know, 2 or 3 year period, and to have the coach know that you support him and that you believe in him and that you're having that communication on a daily basis, so that we don't get too far away. Like, you know, like last night is not a good night to be talking about, you know, the highs and lows of our team. Maybe we get it this weekend. It might be a better time to reflect on what we did this week.
You played Detroit last night. You're playing St. Louis tonight. You've got 22 games, I think, left, 9 of which are against teams ahead of you in the standings, although the standings in the West right now are incredibly stacked up. Barry, from a coach's perspective, what are you thinking about now? And David, what are you thinking about as you approach the trading deadline?
Well, right now I'm just trying to get our team in. And I think, you know, you look at the standings every day. Yeah, you know, you win a game, you move up 3 spots, you lose a game, you move down 4. I mean, it's a little bit of a roller coaster, so you're just trying to keep things stable. And I think you got to forget last night, because today is the most important game. And they're all playoff games, but you can't get too high, too low. But they are important games, and we have to make some short-term goals here, you know, be it a 2 or 3 game segment. That's how we have to approach it. Last year we were in a situation – I think we're five games or 5 points back with 10 games to go. We found a way to get in. It's going to be even tougher this year because there's more teams in the mix, and trying to jump over teams is very difficult and 3 point games. But just keeping the team performing at a high level is number one. And I'll tell you, it is really tough mentally on the players this year because the teams are all stacked up in that situation. There's no time off for them, you know, mentally, because they're playing every second day and they're playing against opponents that may knock them out of the playoffs.
David, what are you thinking about as you hit the trading deadline?
Well, as we get closer to the trading deadline, I'm trying to hope, if you will, that we put ourselves into a position that we can be a buyer. I certainly am trying to not think too much about being a seller, although I admit that's part of the job, that you have to be prepared for that if the team was ever to lose a few games here in a row. I'm one of those guys that we get close to the trading deadline every year and I see the parity in the league and I say, oh, there's not going to be that many trades happen. It doesn't seem like anybody can do anything. And it really feels that way right now. Talking to a lot of my counterparts as we kibitz and say, what if this happens, if that happens, what would you want or what have you? It doesn't feel like there's those big deals out there, but I know I'm going to eat my words because Business 101 goes right out the window for all general managers come March 1, 2, 3, or 4.
Is that because it's an emotional decision or because the reality of where your team sits on the eve of the trading deadline sits in?
It's anything that you can think of. It's like the store closing at 5 o'clock, and it's a sale. It's the night before Christmas, last call at a bar, you name it. We got to get our fix, so to speak. You got to make your last call, and there's been some tremendous decisions made at the trading deadline, and there's been some regrettable decisions made at the trading deadline, and I'm sure this year we're going to be able to analyze a few of those.
Sounds good. Well, I'm going to let both of you go. I know you have a game tonight. David Poyle, Barry Trotz, thank you for joining us. And Bill Clement, anything you want to add?
Hello, gentlemen. And I just want to confirm with Barry Trotz that, yes, it is true. We think that your first roommate when you were assistant coach with the Baltimore Skipjacks was Kenny Albert, who was doing radio. And, David, I just wanted to ask you, do you still hold the record for most hat tricks at 11 in Northeastern University's history?
There you go, Billy. You are very informed. I'm a legend. It's just getting better. Thank you.
There you go. Kenny. No, listen. Everybody knows you as a GM, but nobody knows you as a player.
Well, that's been a while ago.
There's a reason for that, Bill.
You should come out and see us at the GM's games. I'm one of the better players right now.
That's because you're in shape. Thanks a lot, guys. Callers, stay on the line. We'll get back to you after we take a quick break. This is the NHL Hour on Sirius XM.
Crosby, the Pittsburgh Penguins, and you're listening to NHL Hour with Commissioner Gary Bettman on NHL Radio. Now back to Commissioner Bettman.
Welcome back to the NHL Hour. Gary Bettman in Nashville, along with Bill Clement, who happens to be in New York. You there, Bill?
I'm certainly here, and that comeback music was so appropriate. I love that song. I remember that song from whenever it was done, like 30,000 years ago.
So I picked
that
one, too.
That was your choice, too, right?
That was my choice,
too. You picked
that
one.
I thought it was appropriate, as did you. Do you want to?
I did.
Go ahead.
By the way, just Barry Trotz was talking about the teams involved in Nashville trying to get into the playoffs. The bottom 11 teams in the Western Conference are now separated by 9 points. The Nashville Predators are currently in 12th spot with 57 points. They're 5 points out, but from 64 points at Vancouver in fifth place, all the way to Phoenix, who is tied with Colorado and St. Louis at the bottom of the West, 9 points separating 11 teams. It's unbelievable. It's still open to anybody to make the playoffs in the West.
Isn't that great?
Yeah, it is. It's a little less murky in the East. Pittsburgh and Carolina are the two teams that are within striking distance, and Carolina's 5 points out. Pittsburgh is 6 points out, so they've got some work to do, but the West is unbelievable.
We're looking forward to a good stretch run, and quite frankly, this is, to me, what it's all about when you focus on competitive balance. No matter who you root for, you're rooting for a team in just about every instance that's got a chance to make the playoffs. And once that happens, you know anything can happen. Do you want to give our listeners the call-in number again, and then we'll start taking some calls?
Why don't we do that? It's 877-645-6696, 877-645-6696. Love to hear from you.
Well, why don't we hear from Mandy in Winnipeg? You're on with Bill and Gary. This is Sirius XM.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Anyhow, I noticed that all your lovely products have that lovely hologram NHL logo. However, your publications that do articles on the players, how do they go about doing that, and why do they not have that? Are the players not property of the league?
Their contractual rights are the property of their teams. I would suggest that none of the players or the Players Association would buy into the notion that the players themselves are the property of the league. But I think the serious answer to your question is licensed merchandise, which is manufactured and distributed under our authorization, has a certain level of quality and is pursuant to contractual relationships that we enter into. And the way we signify that this is licensed merchandise that has been approved by us is with the hologram. With respect to covering the game, with respect to articles that are written about the players or about the game, because there are free speech rights in both the United States and Canada, and the media covers, authorized or not, for better or for worse sometimes, but the coverage of the players themselves is something that's typically treated in the public domain, and as a result, people in the media get to cover our players and our game in ways that they think would be interesting to listeners, viewers, or readers. And we hope, as most of them tend to do, they do it in an interesting, insightful, and in an accurate way. But that is a very good question, and it's one that keeps intellectual property lawyers busy on a regular basis. Bill, my screen has gone down. I don't see any callers. You want to pick one, and let's go to the next caller?
Boy, would I ever love to do that if I had a board in front of me that where I could see callers' names, Gary.
Ah, well, actually...
back up to you in the Nashville booth.
Okay. Actually, we just... The board came up again. It keeps going down. I know there are a lot of people holding on, and I apologize if it's taking us a while to get to you, but let's take Lewis in Atlanta. Lewis, you're on with Bill and Gary, and this is XM Sirius.
How are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you?
Very good. I wanted to ask you a couple of questions. One is the lawsuit that the Atlanta Spirits ownership group is embroiled in. How does that affect their daily operation?
Well, it's not really affecting their day-to-day operations. Bruce Levinson and his partners are the ones who are responsible on a day-to-day basis for operating the club. I think the issue tends to be more long-term with respect to the need for funding, long-term planning, and the fact that there is a dispute among the owners as to exactly who owes who what and who should be in control. The good news is that while it's dragged on certainly long enough the last couple of years, they're about to, if they haven't just, actually, I think they just started the trial this week, and my hope is that this will get to a resolution sooner rather than later, so that all of the uncertainty as to who's in control and who owes who what can be put behind us, and everybody can focus on what takes place on the ice. But again, the day-to-day operations are not being affected, and I think it's everybody's expectation that the people who are running the club will ultimately wind up being in control. At least that's what I'm hearing from the various ownership groups.
Yes, and does that make a difference with their personnel decisions on how much money they might be able to spend, how much money they can spend, that kind of thing?
I don't think that has been impacting the club, but obviously when there's a distraction going on and a lot of money and time is being invested in lawyers and lawsuits, It's not as good for any franchise in any sport as if the franchise has a unified ownership group and everybody's focused on the same thing, namely the performance of the team on the ice and making sure the fans are having the best experience. I don't think anybody in Atlanta's being shortchanged, but I do think that getting this behind the franchise will be better for everybody. But day to day, everything that needs to be done is being done. Don Waddell is making the personnel decisions in running the Thrashers. I assume the same thing's true on the basketball side for the Hawks. But again, having the constant grind of a large litigation and everything that's attendant to it, including the time it consumes and how distracting it is, will be better for everybody once it's behind them. Why don't we go to Bill in Tallahassee? Bill, you're on with Bill and Gary. This is XM Sirius.
Good afternoon, Commissioner and Bill. How are you two doing today?
We're doing great. What about you?
Well, feeling a little better now that Sirius Radio has been saved, which is going to lead into one of my bigger two questions. If Sirius did go under, was there any plans or any contingency plans to perhaps broadcast on the NHL Network, or is that something in the works down the road? And question number two, with the trade deadline coming up, what is your thoughts about these long-term contracts? And, of course, there's going to be a lot of talk about these players with no trade clauses. And what's your thoughts about that?
Questions. And the first one, with respect to Sirius and XM, while I know there's been a lot written about the need for a cash infusion because some indebtedness was coming due and the risk of bankruptcy and the like, I didn't envision that SiriusXM would be going off the air. It might have changed hands in terms of who owned it, but SiriusXM, I think, has 20 million subscribers, and satellite radio, as far as I'm concerned, is one of the all-time great inventions. It allows for there to be channels like this one that talks about hockey 24/7. It allows me to get my fix of classic rock and roll music uninterrupted whenever I want to hear the type of music I'm interested in listening in. So I think there's always going to be a place for SiriusXM. I think it's more a question of the indebtedness that XM and Sirius, both before the merger and afterwards, have accumulated, and the need to pay for the indebtedness as it comes due. Based on what I've seen in the papers, the offer by DirecTV to basically step up, satisfy some of that indebtedness in return for some equity makes a whole lot of sense. It shows that people who are involved in dealing with consumers through satellite, in case of DirecTV television, believe in this business, and I don't envision them going off the air ever, if any time soon, to say the least. With respect to long-term contracts, I have always been a proponent of having shorter-term contracts, no trade clauses. Don't make a whole lot of sense to me, although I'm not a general manager and I'm not subject to the pressures that they're under when they negotiate with players. And sometimes there are players that are insisting on it and you can't sign them without it. And I respect that. And I respect the desire of players who sign contracts to know that they're going to be in one place and that they're going in to be in the place that they want to be. With respect to the salary cap, though, I think you have more flexibility if you're dealing with shorter term contracts and no trade clauses. And there have been some very long, long contracts, some 10 years or longer. And I think it depends on the player and the team and the situation. And we don't know how good or bad these contracts are going to be. I think long term, we're going to have to see how they work out. My guess is that in some cases, people will find out that they worked out very well. And in other cases, there may be regret on either side, from the player or the club, that they had entered into the long-term contract. Because when you enter into a long-term contract, not only are you banking on a particular player and a player's banking on a particular team, the notion that the compensation was fair throughout the entire term of the contract, it's pretty hard to guess or get it right. If a player exceeds expectations, then he may regret that he's not being paid more, because he may turn out to be worth more. And if a player is being overpaid, a team may regret it because they're not going to have the money available under the salary cap to acquire the talent they think they need to be competitive. So long-winded way of saying I think the jury's out. In some cases, it'll probably have turned out to be a pretty good thing, and in other cases, either the player or the club may wind up having regrets. Why don't we next go to Dave in Edmonton? You're on XM Sirius with Bill and Gary.
Good afternoon, Bill and Gary. How are you guys today?
We're good. How about you?
Good.
It's not too bad here today. It's about minus two. I'm just working on the kids' skating rink in the backyard, giving it a quick flood. I got a couple of quick questions for you, Gary. I just want you to understand before I ask you these questions to know that I'm a very avid fan of you. I think you've done a really good job in the NHL as a commissioner. A couple of questions that are my personal opinion. One is on the NHL, the East-West division. I would rather see teams that have the most points, be it either East or West. For example, if you have three teams in the West division that have more points than the bottom three in the East, they should make it to the Stanley Cup playoffs. I understand you before you said had issues with travel and you want to have rivalries and all this stuff. But to me, to make it fair, the amount of money that I pay as a fan, I want to see the teams that deserve to be there points-wise make the playoffs, be it an Edmonton, Calgary Stanley Cup, New York Rangers, Philadelphia Flyers Stanley Cup. If they win the games, they get the points, they deserve to be there, and they should be there. My second thing is, it's kind of a thorn. I'm not a Sean Avery fan, but I've been to a lot of hockey games, and I am a season ticket holder in Edmonton. My tickets are right behind the Oilers bench. I've heard a lot more nastier comments from coaches and, players than what Sean Avery said. And my personal opinion was I think it was a bit of a personal difference between yourself and Sean Avery. I think the length of his suspension was ridiculous. And the last thing I got to say is XM Sirius Radio, I love it, but it is so repetitive. I can hear the same thing over and over and over in 1 hour on it. And I'll hang up and listen to your comments. And thanks a lot, guys. I appreciate you for taking my call.
Well, thank you for holding on and calling in. With respect to having an effect balanced point system so that everybody's competing for the 16 playoff spots, that would necessitate, in order for it to be fair, that every team play every other team an equal number of times. I think in terms of the wear and tear on our players, in terms of the logistics of doing that much traveling, and in terms of fan interest, I'm not so sure in Edmonton you want to see all the teams in the East as often as you would see Calgary or Vancouver, just to pick two teams. And if you're talking about fairness, it may be that if one conference is tougher, more good teams than another conference, the point totals may be less than within the other conference where the competition may not be as steep. And so the only way to implement the type of system you're talking about, as I think about it for 2 seconds, is to have a perfectly balanced schedule. And that's not something, again, I see as a practical matter or even in terms of fan interest, because what we hear overwhelmingly from fans is they like having rivalry games. With respect to Sean Avery, there is nothing whatsoever personal between Sean and me. What he said wasn't confined to the rink. It wasn't confined to coaches. It wasn't confined to other players. It was broadly disseminated and involved people or a person that is not somebody who plays our game and is on our ice. And I think it was important that people understand that the type of comment he made is not representative of the way our players conduct themselves, particularly off the ice. And I think it's important for our fans to know that this isn't the type of conduct that we tolerate. People are going to disagree with lots of decisions we make. I can live with that because while we're not infallible and we make mistakes, we try to do what we think is right. I think it's time for us to go to a break. The call-in number is 1-877-645-6696. We will be back after this break with David Freeman, chairman of the Nashville Predators, and then we'll take your calls.
Hi, this is Dion Phaneuf of the Calgary Flames, and you're listening to the NHL Hour with Commissioner Gary Bettman on NHL Radio. Now back to Commissioner Bettman.
Welcome back, everybody. Bill, did you like that song?
Well, I would love the song if we could get into the song, but some of the intros are so damn long that by the time we get into the song, we're already yakking over the song.
Well, we could turn the song back on and shut up if you'd like to do that.
We could do that. By the way, you're such a Buffalo Springfield fan. Can you name two other people that were in that group besides Neil Young?
Steven Stills.
And, yeah.
And I'm drawing a blank.
How about Richie Furay?
Richie Furay, absolutely. I knew that.
I figured I'd spring that one on you.
Well, you embarrassed me, but that's okay.
You don't have to know all the players. You have to know all of the players in the National Hockey League. You don't have to know Buffalo Springfield.
Actually, the fact that I can't remember or didn't remember Richie Furay is more a function of the fact that when I was into the Buffalo Springfield, I was probably 35 to 40 years younger than I am now, and not all the brain cells are the same as they were.
I can really relate to that.
I'm sure you can, but we're not going there either. Okay. Where we are going to go is David Freeman, the chairman of the Nashville Predators, is with me in the studio here at Somme Center. David, welcome.
Thanks, Gary.
Why don't you tell people a little bit about yourself, where you're from, how long you've been in Nashville, and then what made you get involved with the Predators?
Well, maybe we'll blow right through the personal stuff, because that's the boring side. But I grew up in East Tennessee in Knoxville, University of Tennessee, undergrad, Vanderbilt Law School, a couple of years in Dallas, and back home to Tennessee. You know, the important thing about buying the franchise a couple of years ago, and I guess everybody kind of knows the story by now about, you know, what was going on and kind of the potential for the franchise to not be here, it all revolves around the fact that, you know, we as a city have a chance to hang on to an NHL franchise. There are 30 NHL franchises in the entire world. Nashville's lucky enough to also have an NFL franchise. And I think we as a city, an entire city, realize just how important that is to our economy, to our stature, and to the way that the city has grown. And we were fortunate enough to have a terrific governor and a very supportive mayor that both jumped in and made this happen with us.
What were your expectations when you first decided to buy the club with your partners? And as you look at it a year and a half later, have those expectations been fulfilled, exceeded, or you're scratching your head wondering why you ever did this?
Well, I guess the real answer is I had no expectations. This came about so quickly. I literally woke up one morning and read the headlines in the local newspaper that says, you know, Craig Leopold sells club to Canadian. And, you know, and the process started that day of saying, wait a second, I'm not sure this is going to have a good ending for our city. And, you know, there was literally no thought that went into what am I getting into? What is this going to be like? You know, it's not your typical, you know, 5-year planning process or lifelong dream that you're fulfilling. This was a spur of the moment decision. I'm thrilled that I did it. You know, obviously, you know, this business has challenges like any business does. But I think we're very pleased with the way it has turned out 2 years into it. And you know, the bottom line is we're thrilled to be in the NHL.
What you probably read some of the articles, not a lot, that seem to take issue with the viability of hockey teams in the so-called non-traditional markets. When you read articles like that, what's your reaction and what's your response to that notion?
Well, I understand it a little. You know, we're down in the South. We probably feel the same way about college football. But I've done radio shows up in Toronto, and my response has been this. You know, here, the reason we want this franchise is we have a terrific respect for this game. We know the origins of the game. We know and appreciate where the game came from and the Canadian origins and influence and importance. And we hope that, you know, for people outside of this market, that they would look at the fact that Nashville, Tennessee desperately wants to be a part of professional hockey in the NHL. And I'm a little confused sometimes when they don't swell up with pride and say, wow, do you see, even down in Music City, they want to be a part of this great game, as opposed to, you know, sometimes a more perhaps provincial type view that says, hey, you know, this is ours and nobody else can have it or share it. And, you know, if you really love the game of hockey or anything for that matter, I would think your goal would be to export your whatever your passion is to as many people as possible. So that's how I wish that people viewed Nashville, and I wish everybody in traditional hockey markets was pulling for us instead of you know, and I'm sure it's a small minority that maybe pull against us, but I can assure you there's a great amount of respect for the original six and the origins of the game here in Nashville.
Well, why don't you address head on for a couple of seconds, how is the franchise doing and what is its viability in Nashville, both short term and long term?
Well, I certainly hope that it's good. It's my expectation. You know, there's a lot of stories that go around about you know, the financial side of any pro sports team, and we took an opportunity about 3 or 4 weeks ago to just address that head on, and we invited in one of the local newspapers, and we did an interview with them, and we shared our financial situation. We made a small profit last year. We're on pace to break even this year. And, you know, given where we started with this 2 years ago, we're very pleased with the progress we've made, and we're bullish on the future. We have, as I know you said this morning in addressing another group, we're 10 years into this, which, you know, and going back to my earlier comment about respect for the origins of the game, you know, the Montreal Canadiens, 100 years old this year. We're 90 years behind them in terms of having an opportunity to develop kids that grow up with this game. You know, I'm in my 40s. I didn't grow up with this game in East Tennessee. So this is new for us.
We're talking to David Freeman, chairman of the Nashville Predators. So that people don't think when I do these interviews, they're complete softballs. Talk about what happened with Boots Del Biagio and what, if anything, it's meant to the operation of the club, because there's been a whole lot of speculation about that.
Well, we honestly try not to talk too much about that topic. You know, Boots is, his issues are very personal to him. You know, obviously nobody saw this coming, but it is what it is. We need to deal with it. In the end, it is our hope and our expectation that it will have no effect on the club. In fact, we foresee a scenario where it's actually a benefit to the club, but we will fight very hard to make sure that the club and those, and specifically those of us in the ownership group that have been asked to step forward and cover all of the damage that Boots has brought forth, you know, that there is a fair and just outcome there. You know, I know one of my other partners and I, we added it up a few weeks ago, and I think we're up to somewhere in the neighborhood of $60 to $70 million in personal guarantees that Herb Fritsch and I have provided just to cover some of the damages that Boots has caused. But in the end, you know, the team is ultimately unaffected. The team is moving on, you know, as if none of this is happening. As I said, you know, we're at a point where we're breaking even, you know, which is all we ever said we wanted to do, is break even and then build the best hockey team we can build.
So this team, other than perhaps to the playoffs, isn't going anywhere.
Yeah, the playoffs. This is a stressful time of year, and it is amazing how your emotions can vary from one day to the next. And last night was a rough night, and nobody woke up in a good mood this morning. But now that you're in town, we're counting on you to bring back that luck that you did for us last year, and everybody will wake up happy tomorrow morning.
Watch that. The St. Louis Blues fans who are listening aren't going to like hearing that.
Well,
I'm just here to root for the officials.
I can probably pick out a few games for you to visit St. Louis, and I will be St. Louis's biggest fan that night.
David, thank you for joining us, and good luck the rest of the season.
You got it.
And with all your endeavors here in Nashville. One quick note, Bill. During last week's show, Jeff from Indianapolis called in and volunteered that he was getting blacked out of Blackhawk and Blues and Blues Jackets games on his center ice package, which was, in his case, distributed by Bright House Cable Systems in Indianapolis. We checked with Bright House, and the system is correctly blacking out Chicago and St. Louis, but they are not blacking out Columbus. If Jeff is listening and you're still experiencing problems, please email us at centerice@nhl.com, and we will follow up. And to the callers who we didn't get to, I apologize. Next week, I will be back in the studio with Bill, and our guest will be Ed Snyder, the owner. Actually, he owns now with Comcast, the longtime principal owner and now partners with Comcast, and the chairman of the Philadelphia Flyers, which would be home cooking for you, Bill.
Yeah, I will look forward to that. And I've always said about the Flyers and the Detroit Red Wings that the thing that I respect the most about those franchises are the ownership of people, in this case Ed Snyder in Philadelphia, Mike Ilitch in Detroit. They try to win the Stanley Cup every year with everything that they put on the ice. So I will look forward to that. I want to remind everybody again that NBC's game this Sunday will feature Alexander the Great and the Washington Capitals against Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, and the Pittsburgh Penguins at 12:30 Eastern. Coming up next right here, it's In the Slot with Phil Esposito and Mike Ross, and we'll be back at you. Gary Bettman, the commissioner of the National Hockey League, on the NHL Hour next Thursday at 4 Eastern. We'll see you then, everybody.
For more podcasts, check out NHL.com. This is NHL Radio.